One and all.
Hello, kids.
What's going on, everybody?
For some reason, I answered this even though I'm not staying.
It's all right.
Jeff Griner.
I have exactly 4 minutes of battery life left.
Oh, wow.
Four minutes, man.
For Jeff Griner.
Plug in. In a world where Jeff Griner only has 4 minutes.
I could do this all night.
Well, Jeff, if you got something to say, then you better say it.
Are you recording now?
Yeah. This is how it works.
All right. Here's what I have to say. For the boobs.
Yes!
That's pretty much how I live my life, yeah?
I kind of agree with that sentiment.
I enthusiastically endorse this sentiment.
That's it? Just for the boobs?
That's all I got.
All right, well.
Do you really need more?
If you want to know more, you need to go to honotogoroabimo.org.
And what's that stand for?
How Not to Grow a Beard Month.
Okay.
Excellent. Jeff, good chatting with you, man.
You bet. I'm going to go now.
Bye.
See you later, Jeff Griner.
Bye.
Have a good night, guys.
Hi, Jeff.
Have a good night.
I mean, Jeff.
Yeah. He's awesome. He needs to be on again.
But only for that long.
Only for 4 minutes, yeah. Though.
Well, I'm really glad the Marilith is not that much different in the Monster Vault than the original Monster Manual, because I was going to run out and buy the vault for like $12 more, and paying $12 for that Marilith is a lot.
Yeah.
But I guess with the updated damage, she'd still be pretty tough.
Hey, there's Thad.
Weapon dance is cool.
Looks like it's holding together.
Okay.
I think so. I know Aaron and I updated to the new one, so.
Yeah, I'm still fighting with it.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how to see the chat now.
Yeah, if you look at the bottom, you see the thing that has the end call, add people and all that. Over towards the right, near the duration, it has a chat bubble. Hit that and it'll come up.
Oh, there we go.
Yeah, there it is.
Nice. Tracy, you're just now starting drinking? I'm so beating you then.
Just now? I've been drinking for a little while, dude.
Yeah, we got a head start on you, Dan.
Well, I'm chugging a bottle of wine right now, so.
Jeebus, I had some ice cream.
Boone's Farm. Is it Boone's Farm, Thad?
Mint chocolate chip ice cream with ice cream mixed in.
Nice. I had some Imagine World Peace. Is it World Peace? Something like that? Ben and Jerry's? No, it's a Spanish Rodera white. It's
okay.
A little white blend. So,
all right, Thaddeus, you're killing me. What was your question?
Well, let's start over. I mean,
okay.
Let's have everybody do the introduction thing. So roll call. Tracy, who are you?
I'm Tracy.
Okay, good job. Mike, who are you?
Mike.
Randall?
Randall, Dead Orcs.
All right, Aaron.
I'm Aaron.
All right.
Last I checked, I could be wrong.
There we go. So that's introductions.
Flyflourish.com/book.
And plug.
And scene. Okay, so Mike, you wanted to talk about the new Essentials?
Yeah.
Monster Vault?
New podcast. They had a podcast.
Okay, new podcast.
And they had... they had three topics, two of which I remember and one of which I don't.
So this is going to be a podcast about a podcast.
Yeah. Well, yeah, but they had some interesting topics that I think are worthy of pontification.
Okay.
So they talked about the Monster Vault and why previous solos sucked and why they've increased a lot of or beefed up a lot of the solos. They said something which Tracy just confirmed to me, that a lot of the elites and normals haven't changed that much other than the new damage expressions, which are fine because they were really good. But that solos all have different ways to continue to make a significant threat to a party, even when they're stunned and dazed and stuff like that, which I think we've seen in Monster Manual 3 and Demonomicon and the Dark Sun Creature Catalog.
Okay, see, that kind of almost answers my question, but I was going to say, you know, there was a podcast about the Monster Manual 3 that had come out, you know, and they were talking about how much better their builds right. were and how they were, you know, they're finally fixing a lot of the issues that they thought they felt they had with some of their monsters.
Right.
So I thought my question was going to be, so are they saying that everything they said they were fixing in Monster Manual 3, they didn't fix, and now they're saying they fixed it? And no. is this going to be the same thing we hear for the next Monster Vault that they have planned? That, oh, yeah, well, the last Monster Vault was broken, and this one's really fixed. It seems like a really familiar line.
I don't have it, so those of you that do, are you seeing any major differences between the solos? Or the solos in the Monster Vault and the solos in Monster Manual 3. My impression is that they are very similar.
Are you ready to hate me?
Who, me?
Yeah.
Sure. I'm always ready to hate you.
It's still in its shrink wrap.
Oh, you suck. I do hate you.
Well, that's okay. Newbie can't get his out of the mailbox. So.
Yeah.
Yeah. I mean, I'm just waiting till Amazon gives me mine.
Yeah. I have...
Ballpark bastard.
Yeah, I have midterms this week, and so, you know, I'm really tied up in studying, and so I was rushed to get that unboxing video of the tile set out, and that was the last thing I did for the site, so. So no Monster Vault for me.
You chose the city tiles over the Monster Vault. I guess somebody else had already done a Monster Vault unboxing, right?
Exactly.
Yeah, got it. So anyway, from what I've seen and what I've heard, the monsters are, the Monster Manual 3, and I know Dave Chalker on Twitter said that to him, he can't see running monsters that aren't from either Monster Manual 3, Monster Vault, Demonomicon, and I'm assuming from the Dark Sun Creature Catalog, which are all, you know, that's all post the new damage expressions, which is probably the biggest major change they've had to monsters since they've come out. And and that's my belief, too. I'm pretty much going to put all my other books on my lowest shelf except for those four, and I'm going to use those four.
So, okay, what else do they talk about in the podcast?
So the other big one, which I think is really the topic that we'd want to talk about, is they talked more, they had the lead developer for DDI and for the new character builder on. And it was a pretty interesting talk. There was a lot on the philosophy of Wizards with piracy and Wizards with, Wizards policies towards sending cease and desists, which they say, look, the cease and desist is it's the nicest thing we can do. You know, that it seems really mean, like, you know, you're a hardworking person who loves the hobby and you're trying to make things good. And then, you know, all of a sudden you get a cease and desist and it looks like this big lawyery thing, but they say, look, that's, you know, that's the lowest rung of possible things we could do. And we don't want to do the other ones. So that's why we do cease and desists.
Yeah. You know, you're in trouble when the lawyer's on the phone with you.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
That's when it's an issue.
You get a letter, you know, big deal.
Yeah.
But, but they clearly understand the balance that they have between having a really strong community of people who are really enthusiastic about the game and want to build a lot of stuff and having a lot of intellectual property that they want to protect. So it's, you know, like we can sit and pontificate and argue about it all day long, but it's also clear that they're arguing about that internally. One thing that I thought was really interesting is the lead developer continually brought up portable devices and mobile devices over and over and over and over again. And I'm screaming into my radio, and I'm, you know, driving home tonight listening to it. And he even says, like, I know there's a lot of people saying, why did we do Silverlight instead of HTML5? And, you know, well, technology in hand and what we're experienced with and blah, 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 blah. And then he went back to mobile devices again. Well, we're really looking at mobile devices, and people are going to have all sorts of different devices that they want to run this on, and we want to support that. And I'm like, Silverlight doesn't support anything except, like, Windows Phone 7.
But that's the disconnect that I don't think people understand is like, okay, look at Netflix, right? Their entire streaming system is written in Silverlight, but they have an iPhone app that isn't written in Silverlight.
So, right. I mean, if Wizards is actually putting out an app, you know.
It sounds like if that's what he's talking about, I mean, if he's talking about wanting to design apps, it doesn't matter if their system is based in Silverlight because they can write their app in the app's native language as long as it uses their API. And so then it doesn't matter. I mean, so the web interface is Silverlight. Too bad. But the app is still going to run on your system because it's not going to be a Silverlight app. The Netflix app written for the iPhone works, even though the Netflix, you know, base web page system is completely written in Silverlight. So,
sure. So
it doesn't matter. I mean, everybody's screaming about this whole, you know, it won't work on my iPad thing. Well, you know, maybe they've got plans for an app.
And that's exactly what the conclusion I came to was. They specifically said, this guy specifically said that he's not going to mention dates or products that aren't, you know, ready to ship, and then kept talking about mobile technology. So I'm guessing that they're working on, I'm hoping they're working on something. My feeling is, though, you know, there's not to argue with you, because I wouldn't want to do that.
But oh, no, no.
I mean, even though you're wrong, I really wouldn't want to argue with you about it. Netflix is, you know, I would say a significantly more complicated, you know, client server kind of architecture than a character builder would be. I mean, of course, I don't build either, so I can say anything I want. But I could see them doing it in HTML5. I could see them doing a really simple, streamlined character builder in HTML5 that would run cross-platform without having to build different clients for everything. And instead, they're going to have to build a bunch of different clients for things. And the problem with building a bunch of different clients is, you know, yeah, you move to mobile technology, but you're still designing totally different interfaces for each system you build it towards. And you better have a big dev team. And my guess is they don't.
I don't know the size of their dev team, and I haven't listened to the podcast, so I don't exactly know, you know, what he's saying and what they're thinking. But it seems like, you know, their staff was pretty inundated already with Silverlight, and that's kind of why they ran that direction. And,
and
I mentioned it on the last roundtable that I know that Microsoft, and my contact with Microsoft has been cut off for the last couple of years, I have to admit. But, you know, when I was around them, there was a big push for Silverlight, and they gave a lot of incentives. I mean, they dropped a lot of money to get...
Yeah, Microsoft has always done this.
Yeah, and so I wouldn't be surprised if their whole staff was trained by Microsoft and was supplemented by Microsoft, and so now, you know, it's their one primary language, and the idea of having to learn HTML5 and get a product out quickly, or just going with Silverlight, something they're already, you know, functional in, and making that a quick fix, probably looked more cost effective to them. And, you know, maybe there's plans for HTML5. Maybe not, but the fact of the matter is they went this direction. It's the direction that they're traveling, and so there's no amount of bitching and moaning is going to stop them from launching the Silverlight designed monster builder. Now we can just hope that they go with some mobile apps and that it works out, and they don't try to charge us, you know, $6 for the app.
I'd be happy paying $6 if I don't have to pay $6 a month.
I would be happy if it wasn't already charging, you know, people who are already paying them a monthly subscription fee. That seems a little weird to me.
I guess. I don't know. I'd still pay. still and that's you know, we could all sit here all day long
You are listening to the Mike and Thaddeus show?
Yeah, I'm sorry. I'll shut up. I promise I'll shut up.
Yeah, I wouldn't be surprised if they decided to do a MVC pattern for this model view controller, which would mean that Silverlight, I don't know for sure, could be just be the view, and if that's true, it'd be a lot easier to create other apps that use the rest, like the APIs for the back end.
Is MVC what Rails uses?
Yeah, I'm pretty sure. I haven't used Rails, but it's the common one. It just means that you separate out your views from your storage, and the controller controls it, like does the back and forth between the two.
So this is why Tracy is awesome, because not only does she know RPGs, and can she school us on DMing, but she can also tell us about, you know, web-based design, and
she can write a Perl script to totally kick your ass.
Exactly, exactly.
Yeah, I don't know any of that crap.
So. Yeah, me neither. Me neither.
I'm like going, yeah, guys, if I can log on and there's no lag, I'm happy.
I'm happy.
Don't care.
Well, that's actually my other point, which is I really don't care what they build it in, but I'd like it on my iPad and I'd like it on my iPhone.
Right. You
know? See, that's fun right there. That's Mike saying, look at me. I have an iPad.
Like a million people have iPads.
Right. Just about a million.
No, it's way more than a million, actually. Lots and lots of people have iPads.
Freaking talk to me when the Droid tablets come out.
They're all around.
Yeah, I do not have an iPad. So.
Neither do I.
I thought about the Droid one, and I thought I'd also like one that works.
Oh.
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 Oh, I'm staying out of this one.
You guys have heard of the bleeding edge of technology? I'm on the bludgeoning end of technology.
Yeah.
So, When it's ready to bludgeon you over the head, that's when I have it. So.
They had some other – there was another topic, and God, for the life of me, I can't remember what they had at the end – their end segment. One thing they had, which is cool, and maybe this would be a fun little thing, and I posted it on Twitter. They you know, the designers there talked about their five favorite monsters, you know, what their five favorite monsters are. So what are your guys' five favorite monsters?
Oh, geez. My ex-girlfriend.
Oh, very nice.
My other...
is she epic level, or...?
My other ex-girlfriend. Yeah, well, my ex-fiance is epic level, definitely.
Oh.
I can't cuss on this podcast because it's marked clean, so.
No, I totally tweeted this earlier today because I couldn't remember who was asking about that. And it was Modrons.
Oh, they just made of them, didn't they?
Yeah. Githyanki. Goblins. Liches. And, oh, crap, I can't remember the fifth one. Hell, I can't remember the fifth one. Maybe it'll come to me later when someone else is talking about them.
What about you, Mike? What are your favorites?
So the five I put up there, but I got kind of called out on it, are Balors, Beholders, Liches, Demi-Liches, and Draka-Liches. That's too many liches. I said, yeah, but one's tiny and one's gargantuan, so it's not like they have the same size. But after thinking about it, I sure like Marilliths too. Because any, you know, epic level six armed creature that gets six scimitar attacks and is topless, that's hard to beat.
Yeah, you can't beat that. That is some epic level Sinbad crap. You know,
that's oh, if only Jeff was here for the booby talk.
Yeah, Jeff Griner.
I like Spriggans.
Spriggans.
Yeah,
Tracy, and what are your five?
I like Spriggans, Vinehars, Manicores, Oni, or however you pronounce it, and yeah. Let's see, what would I do the other one? Probably like a nymph.
Nice, I'm down with that.
Yeah, there you go.
Heyo.
Aaron, what are yours?
Let me see. Blue dragons, beholders, mimics, displacer beasts, and God, what's the fifth one? Not flumps, even though that's the first thing that came to mind.
Yeah, me too. I love those things, man. They're awesome.
It's like, yeah, how can you wrong with a lawful good monster? It's
why did you pick the blue dragon over the other ones?
I just think they're the coolest of the, certainly of the chromatics, and I like them more than most of the metallics too. The only gargantuan miniature of all those sets they've released has been the blue dragon because it's just the coolest one.
Yeah.
It looks the best.
I like black dragons myself. I'm always a big fan of black dragons. And their mini is great for that too.
Yeah.
I like black dragons.
They breathe acid.
Well, my favorite, thanks for asking, guys.
Thad,
who are you again?
What's your favorite?
Yeah.
How did you get on the show?
So my favorites would be, I got to start with the Chaos Dragons.
Oh, really?
Monster Manual 3. Oh, I love them. I think they're awesome.
You know, you're picking new guys.
Yeah, they're pretty badass. They are pretty badass. I mean, dragon made out of living stone? Come on. That's just amazing.
Yeah.
Hello.
What's up, Sam?
Not much. Do you need me to record?
No, we're recording.
Do you need backup?
Sure, why not? Redundancy is always good. Let's see. Chaos Dragons. Bullywugs. For the lower levels. I just like the idea that they come with like an environmental effect.
Yeah, that's
pretty
cool.
They have like this almost like kind of curse or degradation to the... Looks like we lost Sam. Oh, no, he's here. No? Yes? No? Okay. Let's see. What else is there? The Banner Snatch. I love that guy.
Is that even a thing?
Or the Banner Hop? Is it the Banner Hop?
Banner Hop,
Banner Hop, yeah. Monster Manual 3, man. Look it up.
Yeah,
Oh, okay. I don't have that one yet.
They're on the
Sorry.
Back, aren't they?
All right.
They're the
yeah.
guys.
Yeah. They snatch little children.
Oh, sweet. Okay.
Yeah. Zombies. I love just throwing tons yeah, and tons of zombies at people. Gosh, and I can't even think of a fifth. Everybody's kind of dropping out on that.
I got my fifth. My fifth was Illithids.
Ooh, nice.
Yeah, because those Mind Flayers always, they're great bad guys. They're just fantastic bad guys.
I guess I just like Beholders. Even broken Beholders, because when someone sees a Beholder at the end of a hallway, they know what to expect. They know, you know, bad stuff's going down. Mm-hmm. So.
The great thing about them, though, is they're so variable, you can just mess with them. I mean, you can just, you know, I mean, you can make them a gas spore instead of a Beholder. And they're like going, oh, it's a Beholder, no, no. Oh, it only has one hit point.
Well, this is
anyone?
Lively.
I was like, did I cut I think, out again? Oh, crap.
No, we're all trying to get Sam to upgrade his Skype.
Right, so actually, I'm trying to figure out how to turn off the dialing noise. I guess I kind of need it.
Mine,
oh,
I
God,
think actually,
what the hell else did they talk about today?
I don't know. What,
I gotta go look.
I don't know. I've been keeping my head down about D&D discussion the last few days. The intensity, so to speak, has been kind of turning me off about D&D in general.
What intensity?
Well, I mean, just everybody bitching about everything. It's been Essentials, Character Builder,
yeah.
The local game store thing, and then, you know, everything else. It's been like, you know, just play the fucking game. I don't want to hear everybody complaining.
Oh, there
and
goes the clean tag.
Bleep, sorry.
Oh, that's...
No, it's okay. We'll take that later.
You're making work for me. You're making work for me.
Oh, in that case, fuck you, Thaddeus.
Oh, no.
Oh.
See, I'm just going to have to edit him completely out of the podcast now, so that's more work.
You won't have that hard a time, I'm sure. Yeah, I mean, just everybody complaining about everything. I mean, just this dark cloud over D&D, so to speak, and it's just... It really to the point where I was seriously considering putting my local game, the one that I'm running, on indefinite hiatus and just trying to do something else just to get away from D&D for a while.
Is your group complaining?
No, not specifically. I got an earful about the character builder from them, but
really?
At that point I was entirely in agreement with them, and I still to some extent am. But it's just, yeah, everything on Twitter, all the blogs and everything else, it's just been very negative.
You're going to shut down your game because of what's said on Twitter?
Well, I mean, it's not so much because of that people were flaming me or because I disagreed with them. It's just that there was just so much negativity surrounding.
The atmosphere, right.
Yeah, exactly. And
I'd probably
it was just
be Twitter
bugging.
First.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I didn't want to, it's a lose-lose situation. So, and I figured I could put my D&D game on hiatus and do something else. So it's not like I would be saying, no more gaming.
Right.
It'd be more like, no D&D for a while. But I mean, I'm not going to do that. But I was seriously considering it for a while.
Yeah. I guess I tend to ignore most of the, I try to ignore it. You know, it pops up and the edition wars start up again. And now there's 4.0 versus 4.5 edition wars. And then there's people complaining about dungeons. And it's just,
I know those people that complain about dungeons.
Yeah.
No. Well, I'll tell you what. Oh, go ahead.
Oh, I was just going to say, it's too bad Sam's not here because he would probably have more to say about this. But I mean, I know Aaron's not the only person that feels that way. One of the guys who writes for Sam's website wrote an article about how he was feeling really fatigued with 4th edition. And then he started musing on Twitter whether or not he'd be so fatigued with it if he wasn't always engaged in all the conversation and stuff about it.
Yeah, that wouldn't surprise me at all. I mean, I don't really feel the fatigue again because I try to. Anytime I start to see conversations like that, I'll just avoid them. But I can certainly like I feel sometimes I wrote a whole blog article on my other blog about how sometimes I feel like I'm just totally stretching my attention way beyond the things that I actually care to focus on, and I feel like I've got a Twitter problem because I spend way more time on Twitter than, you know, or I think about all the time that I'm spending on Twitter and how I could pour that back into my game or pour that in my website and, you know, actually make stuff. And I don't know, but I could certainly say that if you just, if you keep reading stuff you don't like, you're going to, you know.
Yeah. I mean, that's been a lot of my problem is just a lot of just the atmospheres. I mean, like today alone, I've missed a lot of the conversations that have been going on. I mean, I've been aware that they've been happening, but I definitely haven't been reading them. And that's the way I'm going, at least for the next few days, if not the next few weeks. I'm tired of, if I weren't so plugged into the D&D Twitter community, I don't think I would have as much problem with it. That's part of the reason I was thinking about moving to another game, at least for a little while. It's like, I don't have the investment in time or effort into any of these other games that I do, or game systems that I do the D&D one. I don't write about them on a blog. I don't, you know, talk a lot with other fans about them. I'm not interacting with developers. I'm not doing podcasts about them. So I think to some extent that's why I was looking getting away, just to get disconnect the game from the community.
Sure.
Well, and you know, that's why I like just coming here and getting to talk with you guys, because it's not always Dungeons and Dragons. You know, there are other games out there that we play, and when Matt James came on, you know, I got to talk to him and some of you guys.
Mike James. It's not Mike James?
No, we're not going to go down that road.
Okay.
He's you know, they gave me a lot of suggestions for fun games to pick up, and I'm branching off, you know, a lot into board games because I'm trying to pull some of my other friends in. But I'm having a lot of fun, and I know Tracy is from conversations that we had, and she's being really quiet tonight, so I'm going to try to pull her out. And you know, we've had a lot of conversations about other games outside of D&D and how playing those, you know, if you want to bring it back to D&D, playing those makes you a better DM. And it also kind of gives you a little break from the game, so you feel, I guess, a little more energized to play when you do go back to D&D. You know?
I think so, yeah. Although I haven't had a chance to play any other games yet, but I read about them and blog about them. And to be honest, I know sometimes the conversation can get a little too negative, but I really enjoy it because I learn a lot from it, even when it is negative. But I can understand how, for some people, it might be hard.
Well, and I think there are different people types when it comes to debate and when it comes to conversation and just process like that. You know, some people feel drained at the end of a long conversation or a long argument, or when they feel they've put energy into something. And some people feel energized. You know, I love coming off of conflict. I love coming off of discussion with people. And I think that some of that's left over from, you know, when I was a pastor. That was one of the more exciting things about the job, was just the deep conversations with people. And that's really energizing to me.
And, well, and there's nothing to say that you can't have
podcast wolf. Truck up. You were a pastor?
Yeah, I was a pastor.
No kidding.
Yeah, I'm licensed to do weddings and funeral.
May I ask the nomination?
I worked for the Free Methodist Church for years, and then the Lutheran Church for a while.
Okay, no, I'm not judging. Just was curious about that, so I'm cool. I had to pause there for a moment. I now return you to your D&D conversation. I just throw something out like that, and I'm gonna have to you have to bring that to attention. So.
No, it's okay. My first degree is in theology. I have a bachelor's of science in theology. So I speak.
Very cool.
I know a little Greek and I know a little Latin, but not enough to get by these days. So.
Well, my anyway, only input. Oh, go ahead, Mike. I was just going to say
that, you know, Thaddeus pointing out there's some people that feel drained after a long conversation, a long argument, and there's some people that feel kind of, you know, energized after it. And there's some people that at least enjoy that conversation. And there's really nothing to say you can't do both, because I enjoy things like the DM roundtable. I enjoy 4Geeks for you. I like those conversations with people, but especially after the podcast, I do feel tired. I mean, I've enjoyed it, but I'm tired nonetheless. And the community thing, the Twitter thing, that's just an extension of that. Most of the time I do enjoy it, but sometimes I definitely do it definitely does hit that fatigue point where it's like, I don't want to anymore. I'm sure this is interesting. I'm sure it's entertaining. At least to some people, I'm sure it's informative. But sometimes you just, you've had so much that you just, you're tired and you have to step away from it for a while.
Yeah, see, for me, at my age, at this point, when I see conversations about things that are hobbies and games, I will put in my two cents if I think that it's necessary, but I don't get offended if someone doesn't agree with me or whatever, because it's just, you know what? It's my opinion. And you have your opinion. I'm not here to try to convince you. I don't believe you're right or wrong on the internet. I'm just throwing my two cents in, and if you like it, great. If not, I don't have a problem with that. So I don't usually – the only discussions that I usually tune out are the ones that get real heavy into game theory, because quite frankly, that bores me to tears. And it's like, you know what, guys? Just play the effing game. I don't care about this. I mean, I suppose it's a designer discussion, and a lot of the folks that are on Twitter that are really into design and stuff love that, and that's awesome. Bores me to tears, so I usually tune it out unless it's something that's really keen on my own particular game that I'm playing. And so that's, you know, I observe it from a distance, and I, you know, put my feet in, and maybe that's not the right way to do it or not, but I just, I don't get offended by anything usually because, you know, it's a game, guys. So, but that's where I go from there, but.
One of the things I thought, you know, I keep going back and forth with some things. Neil Stevenson, the author of Cryptonomicon and Snow Crash and a bunch of other books, has a really great article that I'm sure will be in the show notes today, called "Why I Am a Bad Correspondent," and it's about how essentially he comes down to the point where I can either correspond with my fans and talk to them a lot, or I can keep writing books. So, which would you prefer? And the answer is, I'm going to keep writing books because I really don't want to do that. So, you know, and it's kind of this idea that there's a balance between the amount of, and obviously, you know, Neil Stevenson has lots and lots of fans, so it'd be a bigger deal, but he's not on Twitter and he's not on any social networking things and he's not on anything like that. But, you know, to him, he sees a balance of you can collaborate and communicate with people, or you can create stuff. So where are you going to turn the balance, you know, where are you going to move the balance back and forth? And I know that I talked about this with Tracy a little bit, and I think that, you know, for some of us who are kind of creating things amidst this community, it's kind of both, right? That sometimes we're creating and we're communicating at the same time. And, you know, but even that's kind of an interesting thing because, you know, you say, okay, well, if we're talking a whole lot, what's the result of that talk? I mean, we're collaborating right now, and there's going to be an actual result of this, right? There's a podcast that's going to go on the air that's going to entertain tens of people. So, you know, that's a useful delivery, a useful product that comes from this conversation. But then I think about, you know, okay, I'm writing a book, and I can either be working on my book or I can be surfing Twitter all the time. And for some reason, Twitter is easier, so I keep going back to Twitter when what I really need to do is finish my book. So
yeah, I'm running into that a fair bit. Yeah, I run into that a fair bit. But yeah, I know we've definitely had conversations, particularly with Quinn and Rob Donahue, and we just, you know, have this crazy conversation on Twitter, and then usually, you know, it might take a week, but blog posts do result from those things. Go ahead.
I mean, I'm interrupting because I was the one that gave you crap for that, right? Quinn were tweeting back and forth and back and forth until my Twitter, my tweet deck client
crashed. You were killing us just as much as we were killing you.
Yeah. And, you know, and I said something like, oh my God, guys, you know, go build something. And you,
right, and we
you
were.
Know, both of you came back and said, we are. And I was like, oh, you know, they're kind of right. Like for me, I kind of see things of when I'm tweeting, I'm not making things. And when I'm making things, I can't be tweeting. And but I think that that's not always the case. And obviously, because I think Sly Flourish, you know, the great, amazing success of Sly Flourish comes from, you know, the tweets as much as it comes from the stuff on the website. So I should know better than to criticize people for tweeting. So I apologize. Yeah.
Well, and you're not the only one. I mean, Neldar today was like, you know, people seem to forget that Twitter's not forums. And I'm like, well, you know, in my mind, I it wasn't worth getting into the debate at that point. And it's just like, well, what is Twitter? I mean, in a way, Twitter is just another communication platform. And some people maybe use it a little too much. I know I've gotten complaints that I do. But it's about communication. It's about talking to each other in a quick, simple way. But I know that I definitely sometimes shirk my true creative time to just tweet, because it's a lot easier to think of things in 140 characters than it is to write a whole long blog post.
Yeah, and you're not using it wrong, right? I don't think somebody can use Twitter wrong. Like somebody, and I'd be the first one to complain.
Maybe a spammer.
You can't use it wrong. Yeah, actually, the one thing, and I think I gave crap to somebody else.
Or club entertainment companies who co-opt channels.
Hey, retweet this to win a free iPad. That makes me want to reach for my revolver.
I definitely have people who have me on a list that's called spam.
See,
they say I just tweet way too much.
Well, they could just unfollow you.
Yeah. But so says the guy who already has an iPad and can afford one to all of us who just wish we could win one or something.
Yeah.
You know. It's you don't want to hear about the free iPads, but you have yours.
I do.
It's ass. Awesome.
He probably secretly has two. I bet he has one in the office.
I bet one's in shrink.
My wife does take mine off and play Plant vs. Zombies all the time. So we only have one then.
I think one of the really interesting things about the Twitter community, as much as it may annoy people sometimes, is just the totally complete different types of conversations you can have. Like, I know Randall's not as big into the design stuff, but I really am. I want to learn that stuff. And Twitter's been great for me to learning that. And being able to have access.
Cool. And that's cool for you guys. No, not at all. Yeah, absolutely. Sure.
Right. No, but... And so, but I get a fair number of people, like a friend at this point is just always like, it's just an effing hobby. You know, why do you have to talk about this all the time? Why do you have to figure out how to build monsters? Just run it from the book. I don't care. And I know that there's a fair number of people in the community who sometimes, you know, they feel that way. And I understand it, but I want to really, this is what I like to learn. I like playing with the numbers and playing with the story and figuring out, you know, I had that article about the dragon die. And, you know, just a discussion about how 3D6 just totally changes how the game plays versus a D20. And those sorts of things just I love learning and talking about. But that's all I have to say.
Well, I mean, it's passion, you know. Some people enjoy it as a hobby, and some people are a little more passionate about it. And that kind of falls to us. And the reality is, a lot of people enjoy listening or reading things written by or created by people who have more passion than they do, you know? And so...
Oh, yeah, I lurk a lot on Twitter. I mean, I'll watch conversations that, sure, I could jump in and they know me, but it's like, you know what? I'm just going to watch this conversation and see what happens. I mean, you might learn something, and it's, you know, it's a sort of the same thing of going onto forums and lurking, except there's a lot less painful because at least the people on Twitter are there because you want them there. So it's a little different, but I use, you know, Twitter for all kinds of things. Yes, I talk about gaming on it, but I also talk about other things too. And, you know, I don't think anyone's, I've seen other people get on to other people about tweeting, not in whatever the presupposed topic is supposed to be, but it's like, look, guys, it's Twitter. If you don't want to, if you don't care about the post, then don't follow me or whatever. I don't care. But
yeah, I know newbie Enrique has taken flack on occasion for that.
Yeah, and it's like, dude, tweet what you want. I don't care. If I don't want to respond, I won't respond. Go ahead. I don't, you know, it's. But at the same time, the flip side to that is if you're going to put something out there, expect responses. You know, so if you tweet something and I feel like being particularly clever or stupid or whatever, then I'll do that. And so either you like that or you don't. And so, you know, it's just the way it is. So
yeah, and You know, and I think Thaddeus, I think it was actually, did I send you a direct message about the iPad thing? Was that
yeah.
that I did?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, you did.
And yeah, and I apologize to you too for being a jackass. And you know, my point was, and I think I you know, how did I say this in 140 characters? What I'm really trying to say is I love everything else that you tweet except that. You know, and
but I mean,
and this is the hard part that I want. There are people that post lots of really good stuff that I don't so good that I don't want to unfollow them. I like everything else, and you know, but then there's these other things, and you know, I don't know. Then I hit a level of fatigue, and really, I think like with the iPad thing, where it torques me is when like seven people in a row all do it, and now. You know, my thing is like those seven people just meant that there were seven others I didn't read or seven others that I skipped past because I had to see those, which isn't exactly true. But I also have to remember that it's an ingestion problem, not a broadcast problem, that it's not your fault for sending it. It's my fault for not having a good way to handle it.
Right.
You know, it's like email. You can't get on people when people say like, oh, you post too often to these lists or you're sending so much email out. Well, no, it's not their fault for sending it. It's my fault for not figuring out how to handle it. And, you know, that's where I'm kind of looking at Twitter and saying, like, well, how do I figure out a better way to handle it? And right now I want to hire somebody. You know, I want, like, I'll tell you, this is the best thing that I've done in my life in, like, the last 2 months. And, I deleted my Facebook account. I just completely wiped it out. And then I told my wife, I asked my wife to sign up for all my friends. And now she can tell me when something really interesting happens on Facebook, which she doesn't really like. But now I've got a human filter between me and all the crap that shows up on Facebook. And that's so nice. Even, you know, now I have to be very nice to her. And I'm nice to her anyway. But
yeah, because that can be a bad job.
Yeah, right. Having to deal with all my crap on Facebook. But then there's, you know, what I want is, and you know, I mean, I'm being totally egotistical here. But boy, it'd be really nice if there was some person who spent like all day long on Twitter reading just D&D stuff and favorited the really good, important D&D related Twitter posts so I could just follow what they hand selected as being the ones that are interesting. You know, and if I could find somebody like that, you know, I'd probably pay him a monthly fee.
What about that Instapaper thing that, what's his name does?
N-World?
Yeah, Morris or something.
Yeah, Morris does. It's
yeah, but that guy hates me, so you'll never see me in that.
Well,
I mean, Critical Hits does it. I think Dave on Critical Hits posts a weekly like the big do that shows.
Yeah, that's the list I constantly strive for and fail to reach all the time.
Yeah, I've been on it once. It's like everything I can do to try to get on there again, and I can't. You know.
Yeah.
I'm friends with the guy. You know, we game together on occasion. And I still can't get on the list.
Critical Bits, that's what it is.
Yeah.
Critical Bits. Yeah.
I've been lucky enough to get on that a couple times, and that usually makes my day.
He's clearly he's clearly paying attention to what's important and think about how many tweets don't get on there. I mean, how many
right.
There must be 10,000 D&D related tweets a week. And yeah. He picks like the top 15.
You think that few? I mean,
it's not more than 15 or 20 each.
You say 10,000, and I'm thinking maybe 1,000 of those come from me a week. So
it could be, yeah.
You know.
So, but it's really, I mean, to me, this is a very interesting problem. And like I said, I'm constantly, you know, going one way or the other. On one side, I think like I got to just get off this so I can actually focus on building my own stuff. And then the other half is like, look, this is where stuff is happening. And if I'm not on it, then I am going to miss stuff, and I'm not going to be in touch with people who. You know, read my site or people who, you know, post really interesting things. And there's some really amazing things that come by.
Well,
it just feels like it's like a 10,000 to 1 ratio.
You proved a point that I'm about to make just, I think it was yesterday. Maybe it was even today. My days have really blended together the last week. Drugs, you know, they're terrible things. So the idea that, you know, you say some people are designing when they're going back and forth on Twitter. Sometimes you don't even know when you're engaged in a conversation with somebody, like in a podcast or on Twitter, that you are designing, but you are. You posted that tip that I made, I think, on the last DM's roundtable when I was with you, and you asked about, or we were talking about minions, and I talked about rolling them a save so they would stay up longer and maybe be more threatening.
Right.
And you posted that as a tip on Twitter, and I didn't even think about A, that that could be useful to other people, or B, that I was actually designing it at that point in a fashion to help people improve their game. But, you know, you picked up on that and you ran with it. And right.
I turned your idea into content for my stuff.
Yeah, but the reality is, even taking this time out to sit down and just chat with other people who are passionate about the game turns into, look, we've created something. Even if it's just one little tip, right. You know, there were five or six people who tweeted me saying, you know, that was a great idea. You know, thanks for that. I'm going to use that.
I got a lot of retweets on that one. People really liked it. Some people really liked it, and other people hated it.
Yeah,
but you know, I mean,
that's how great ideas work.
Exactly.
They're usually polarizing.
Well, guess who hated it? Players.
Yeah. Exactly.
That means something was right.
Yeah.
Because they were like, if I do 130 damage to a minion and it saves, I'm going to be really mad. I'm like, yep.
Yep. Yeah. Exactly. Because there's that high five, and then you roll the d20, and then all those high fives disappear.
So. Yep.
But yeah, even this can be design. Even this is creative. It's just about, I think, even if it's in Twitter, you know, it sometimes it's a waste of time. You know, sometimes I read through Twitter and I'm just like, wow, that was, you know, that was a horrible 15 minutes. I got nothing from that. But sometimes, you know, you walk away from it and you get a lot from it. And so, yeah. You know, and I'm not writing any books right now or anything like that. So I've got.
Yeah, I'm not. Everybody else is. 'Tis the month.
Yeah.
NaNoWriMo.
Yeah. NaNoWriMo.
Actually, I did that a couple years ago. I really enjoyed it.
Yeah. So, sadly, NaNoWriMo falls.
I wasn't on Twitter at the time, though.
Falls in the middle of all my midterms. So.
Right.
Yeah, I did it in 2006 and got about 10,000 words in. So.
Yeah. I hand wrote a book. I hand wrote 60,000 words.
Wow. I think.
That hurts just thinking about.
Yeah. I think Aaron's writing this month for NaNo.
Yeah, I am. I'm actually doing really well. I'm hoping to. And the thing is I'm going to have to keep writing even through after November's over. Because, I mean, that's one of the things about the NaNoWriMo is that everybody's like, oh, you write 50,000 words and you got a novel. No, you don't. 50,000 words is like 200 pages. It's a hell of a lot for an RP, you know, an RPG book, but for an actual novel, not so much.
Well, it's about half. Yeah.
It's a novella is what it is.
Yeah. I mean, I'm aiming for about 85,000 words and I'm about a quarter of the way there. So it's going pretty well.
Yeah. And the funny thing is I hand wrote it, but it took me another year to actually clean it up and edit it and bind it and get it all together into an actual.
Yeah, I'm trying not to think about the whole editing part.
You don't want to think about it, yeah.
No, but yeah, just thinking about handwriting 60,000 words—that's that hurts because yeah, I know exactly what it's like to have how much 60,000 words really is.
Yeah, I loved it. I filled like one of those large moleskins. I filled the entire thing. I had to add 30 pages to the back of it.
I actually did in a moleskin, not a book, but for one of the games I was in, the DM wanted somebody to do a journal for the game, something that we could physically hold and read, and I decided to do it as an in-character thing. So I'd take notes every session, and then afterward I'd write it up from my character's perspective, hand-write it in this little notebook, and God, that was like maybe 1,000-1,500 words, and that just killed me. But it was really cool. I still got it. Unfortunately, the game died after about 12 sessions, so it's not as long as it could be, but what was there was fun to write.
There's a book that the guy who set up NaNoWriMo wrote. I think it's called No Plot, No Problem.
Mm-hmm.
And it's kind of the Bible on how to do NaNoWriMo. But I think it'd probably be very – I haven't read it in a couple of years, but if I recall, I'd bet it would be very useful for – you know, kind of designing RPGs and working on RPG as well. Because a lot of it's like, just don't even worry about anything other than getting in front of it and, you know, moving the cursor to the right.
Yeah.
And, you know, I think there's a lot to be said for that. There's so much pontification that we do and so much worrying about the editing, so much worrying about everything else when what we really need to do is just sit there and do it.
Yeah. Yeah. You can worry about editing all you want, but if you don't have something written to edit, it's pretty much meaningless. So I think that just getting yourself to write, whether it's the 1,700 words a day for NaNo or, you know, 500 words a day, whatever it is, if you're writing, you're making some kind of progress, and that's a good thing.
Right. Whether it's for a novel or an RPG or whatever.
It gets really hard with RPGs when you're doing like monster design along with writing, because trying to get the mechanics in at the same time you're just trying to write something out, it always slows me down tremendously.
Well, I think that's where that system of designers plus
developers
comes in. Yeah. You know, you've got kind of that bifurcation. So one person kind of gets to be really creative with the flavor of the monster, and somebody else gets to be creative with the mechanics of the monster. And I think it leads to its own slew of problems, but I think it's a way of circumventing that problem of feeling bogged down while you're trying to make everything work together.
Oh, totally. I just run into the problem because so one of the things I've been trying to talk to other people about as I try to learn how to write this stuff is that one of the big problems I have is I only ever see a finished product. I never see what the earlier drafts look like. So in my mind, you know, what I'm aiming for is the finished product, when that's not true at all. It probably looks totally different and, you know, it doesn't have full monster stat blocks already done, so I shouldn't worry about that yet. And yet in my mind, you know, that's what I keep thinking of. So I gotta break myself of that.
Well, that post that you linked me just earlier today, or yesterday, maybe it was. I don't remember. Maybe it was today. I can't remember. For some reason, I keep blocking the guy's name. Who's the guy that
Chuck
wrote that?
Chuck Wendig?
Wendig. Yeah, Chuck Wendig, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that guy wrote an article that was really talks about how to just get in front of the writing and just do it and not worry about drafts, not worry about your muse or whatever that is, and just to write the damn thing. So, a good article, and I should be able to link it. No, I don't have my other browser window up, so I'm not going to link it.
It's okay.
It's a mystery.
People
look up
can't
Chuck Wendig.
People can't hear your link, so it'll be all right.
That's true. Look up Chuck Wendig and then put it on the thing that. So yeah. So not to change topics, but we have Jerry, otherwise known as Dread Gazebo, on the line.
Hello,
Jerry. Hey, there he is.
What's up,
Jerry? Go ahead, Tracy.
I was just gonna say, I heard you had a rough day today.
I did. Can you guys hear me or no?
Oh,
yeah.
We can.
No.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Nope.
Okay.
Coming through 5x5.
Can't hear you.
Am I loud? I can turn it down.
No, you're good.
I'm the only one that gets to be loud.
Okay. Yeah, it was a little rough. I didn't expect, I kind of thought that maybe I'd get some bad reactions, but I kind of feel like I unleashed the Twitter Krakens earlier, and all I was really trying to do was shake off the bad stigma that, you know, people say, you know, oh, well, 4th edition plays like WoW, and that's inherently terrible to some people. And, I mean, I'm 26. I had a horrible WoW addiction. I've had Nintendo since I was 5. Like, video games are my bread and butter, so mechanics like that to me don't bother me at all. And, you know, the older crowd, it seems like there's some... I don't really know. I'm not them, so I can't... I don't know, maybe some of you guys? I think, Randall Walker, you're... How old are you, Dead Orcs? Like, 400?
yeah. I'm coming, dude. 400. Wow. I'm only 44. But I'll be honest with you. I played WoW for 3 years myself, and was very hardcore into it. And I can certainly see your argument. I think you made some very valid points. I think that anyone who sees the mechanics in 4E and doesn't see some MMO influence is blind. Is turning a blind eye. I even tweeted that part. You know, they're turning a blind eye because the mechanics are obvious.
Yeah, they admit it.
I just think that it's so funny. I find the whole argument kind of amusing because,
it really is.
The modern version of the game is pulling from video games and MMOs, and that's fine. The first version of the game, guys, was built on tabletop military simulations.
Wargaming, right.
There's a reason in the Monster Manual that there's a little inches sign behind all of the movement, because... Gygax and God help me,
Arneson?
What's his name? Yeah, thank you, Arneson. were tabletop gamers, I mean war gamers, and they envisioned people using miniatures on the table and measuring out, you know, this thing can move 6 inches per round, so you can move, you know, we read it as 60 feet, but it's 6 inches, you know.
Right.
And that's how the first edition of the rules came, you know, came about. And so there's no... It's a silly argument as far as I'm concerned. Or people being, I mean, negative about it is what I'm trying to say.
And it's Go ahead, sorry.
No, you're fine. No, that was basically my point. It's just that there's no reason to not assume that the modern version of the game would pull from modern influences. And that's... Hey,
right.
I'm cool with that.
Just real quick, Mike's got to go.
Oh, yeah.
If we could just pause just for a second and then we'll go back.
Yeah, sure. I just want to mention a couple of things. I think that people will use whatever little soundbite they want to use to try to support their argument, and labeling it as, oh, it's just WoW on paper and I'll just play WoW. Well, you know, I mean, the designers admitted that they have influence from WoW. I mean, marking and things like that were all taken from aggro control and MMOs. And some people embrace it. I know that, you know, on Penny Arcade, they had a whole article about how... I think it was Mike, right, that had a entire session that was basically quest grinding, where they went out and did collection quests as part of a D&D game, and he said his group enjoyed it and had fun. And today there was an article on RPG Musings about how a guy, Psycho Pez, made a D&D game, a D&D adventure, you know, a night, set it all up like Smash TV, where they went room to room and kind of had to clear the room in order to get to the next room. And he said it worked for his group, and it's not something you do all the time. But I don't see any reason at all why you wouldn't use whatever influences. And this article is great. And again, I hope it will show up in the show notes, because it was one of the more creative, you know, creative ways to run a D&D encounter that I'd seen in the last little bit. And with that, I've got to run. So thank you all for having me on again.
Always a pleasure, Mike.
So, talk to you guys later.
See you later.
Thanks for coming on, man.
See ya.
Well, I think the reality is that people will always... Haters gotta hate. That's what I always come back to. And, you know, people will find reasons. And just by comparing it to something that either they don't like, or just by being able to make a comparison, you can say, this looks like this. And so it's not original, you know, not everything they built is from the ground up. And
well,
so
if you stare at anything too long, you're going to see something else in it. I mean, granted, these are kind of obvious, but you know, you've got people that look at a piece of burnt toast and they see, you know, Jesus or something. Like if you just put way too much time into anything, you can draw, you know, I could probably make correlations between D&D and Chutes and Ladders if I wanted to, but I'm not going, you know, I'm not going to go waste my
Candy
time
Land.
Doing that. Yeah.
Candyland. Tracy always wants to bring it back to Candyland.
Mm-hmm. Candyland.
And another thing about as far as 4E mechanics go, like when I met my wife, I played WoW, and this was before I had gotten back into D&D. And then when I did, and I rolled up her first character for her, I made everything relate back to her little gnome mage. You know, I explained how a daily power would work, and basically all the elements of the game I related back to World of Warcraft, and it clicked for her. And I think if it were another edition that I was trying to get her into, that it would have just been kind of so arcane and obtuse, especially since she was never really a gamer. Like, she played some PlayStation games and stuff when she was growing up, but like as far as anything tabletop or computer games, like, that was just not within her realm of things, and it was mine. And I think that the 4th edition's mechanics, the simplicity of it all, really helped me get her into it, hook, line, and sinker, and now she loves it. I don't know if that would have been the case if I was showing her, you know, the 30 different tables to roll on in the 3.5 books.
Yeah. No, I agree with you 100%. I think that's, yeah, you're absolutely right. So.
Yeah, I definitely agree that people do really take the, oh, it's like a video game, or it's like an MMO, or it takes influences from it. They really take that negatively. And to be quite honest, there's really no reason they should. It's as much reactionary, they've changed it, now it sucks, as it is actual dislike of what's actually, of what's being presented to them.
Right, and I mean, MMOs are just another type of game, and the fact that we're taking some game mechanics from another type of game and bringing them into D&D shouldn't be a problem. But it's because there's this, I want to call it being a little snooty about it. Like,
yeah, it's like
so much
like
better
an elitist attitude, it seems.
Right, and so like that whole discussion earlier this morning too about that, oh, now D&D is simulating a video game, which is a simulation of something else. I was like, no, they're just borrowed elements from it. It's not trying to be the video game.
Another thing that came up a bunch today was, well, you know, the 4th edition rule books, basically they were just giant combat simulations, and it was just rules, 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 and there wasn't that much fluff. And, I mean, do they need fluff to be in a rule book as far as, because that's exactly what the books are, they're rule books. Here's how the game runs, here's how combat works, here's feats, skills, spells, etc. Have at it, as opposed to, you know, this is the fantasy world that you're in, this is how things work, blah, blah, blah. I think they, you know, they didn't come outright and say it, but they kind of just left it in your hands as far as all that stuff goes. And people say, oh, well, 4th edition's it's a combat simulator, and I picked up the player's handbook, and it was trash, and, you know, I never looked back.
Well, to be fair, I think they really could have done more to encourage role-playing, to encourage that sort of thing, rather than just going, okay, we know you need rules for combat, but you can kind of do the role-playing thing on your own. I think they went a little too far. There wasn't enough balance, at least initially, in the 4th
right.
edition stuff, and people took that as the direction the entire line was going to go.
It was like because you're picking up 4th edition, they're assuming that you know everything about everything previously, so they just, you know, left that out.
Well, I think that was, from my understanding, that was definitely part of it, is that with the original core books, they assumed prior knowledge of what D&D was, and so they didn't go into that as much. But I think also it was a way of breaking with traditional D&D because, you know, the types of stories that were being told in traditional D&D may not appeal to all new players. Like, they don't really appeal to me. I like creating my own world, and if I had to play in the world that, like, some of the Essentials characters play in, I don't know if I would have gotten as involved or cared as much about the game, to be honest. I do not like having to play a lawful good alignment to play any type of character.
So I want to change gears for just a second and keep on the same topic.
Okay.
But I think Tracy might like where I'm going with this, because I know she's pretty excited about this too. But you know what's a really good role-playing game? Tracy?
Dresden?
No.
No?
Starts with a D, though. You're close.
Dragon Age?
Yeah, that's right. And you know what's a really good video game?
Dragon Age?
Yeah. And you know who's not complaining that Dragon Age, the role-playing game, borrows almost 100% from Dragon Age, the video game? Nobody! Because it's good. and so I don't understand why there's not huge outroar. Oh my gosh, Dragon Age, the RPG, you shouldn't play it, because why not just play it on your Xbox? There's a reason. You know, if I want to go play WoW on my computer, I will. If I want to play 4th edition with friends, you know, in my living room and have a good time, or online, on a virtual map, I will. There's reasons we play each game, even if they borrow heavily from each other. But a good game is a good game no matter what. And so, you know, arguing that a game is not good because it borrows from something else is a completely it's a fallacy of an argument. It's just a way to take a shot at something.
I think to some extent this is where D&D's long legacy has really hurt it, because since it's been out for as long as it has, people, except for brand new people, they have an expectations of what D&D is, whether it's be from their childhood, from their teenage years, for what they played in college, whatever edition they played probably in their formative years is really what they expect out of D&D, what they want out of D&D. And when you change it, even if it's for the better, people are going to complain because it's not what they're expecting out of it. And I think for a lot of people, comparing it to a video game is the best way to denigrate it, to make it seem like it's not as good as it used to be, that it's, oh, it's for the people who have no attention span, who like things dumbed down, whatever. The video game comparison is really not a fair one, because, like I said before, it's not comparing You're not comparing the mechanics. You're not comparing anything like that. You're just comparing what it was before and what it is now. You're not looking at it qualitatively. You're not looking at, okay, is this a good game or not? People are looking at it and go, is this the game that I remember? And that's where D&D has really fallen down, is because they have that crushing weight of 30 years of expectations from people.
But Aaron, I don't know. I don't know if I can agree with that 100% because I have played every edition. And, you know, started with the basic blue box set from there on. And each time I've just adapted to the changes. The thing with 4E that I've loved so much about it is the fact that it finally gave me a chance. And I DM'd 3.5 and I did that okay. But 4E is so much easier to DM than any of the previous versions. Now, I didn't mind playing in the other ones. Quite frankly, I think a player could step into just about any role-playing situation if they're an actual player, and adapt pretty quick. You get some basics of the rules, and you're role-playing. It's the game master or the dungeon master that has the biggest burden of work and of the rules knowledge and things like that. And quite frankly, 4E is the easiest to work with as a DM. And I didn't – sure, I remember how it was playing D&D back in the day, but I haven't really changed the way I play it. Do the mechanics change? Sure, the mechanics have changed some. But we still use a board. We still use the tabletop. Back then we had lead miniatures. You know, we used little cardboard cutouts and crudely drawn maps instead of fancier stuff. But, you know, I think I understand where you're coming from, where you're saying that there is a collected sort of consciousness about what D&D was like at a certain time period. I just don't understand the people who have a big problem with the newer version. I think it goes deeper than just their collective consciousness. I think there's somehow, I don't even know how to put it into words. There's something deeper, some kind of need to feel like, and I think Tracy hinted at it, some kind of, you know, snootiness, if you will. That, well, I'm better because I still play this old version despite the world changing around me, you know, and that's, yeah.
I think it's one thing to to be able to say, you know, I played second edition, I played whatever, and wear it as a badge of pride to say I've been around since this point, but to actually take that and use it against people and kind of just automatically give those new gamers who play that edition a bad rap and say that everything that they're doing is crap and this is how it was. Like, you're just driving people away from the hobby and you're just going to end up alone all by yourself with, yeah, you've got your warm, fuzzy memories, but then you've got nobody to play with. It's one thing to say that was cool. I was there when it, you know, when D&D wasn't cool or when D&D wasn't whatever. And then it's another thing to be like, I was there then and I'm better than you. And here's why you shouldn't even bother playing, because that's kind of the feel that I get from some people.
Yeah.
Well, here's what that's like. And I'll paint a little picture here. And if you ever mention the old school gaming, what is it? Old school gaming revolution or movement or whatever it is. The OSR to newbie DM.
It's a giant boys club. That's all it is. It's a boys club.
Mention it to newbie DM because it's the fastest way to piss him off. Hey, I read this cool article on OSR the other day, and he'll just fly into a rage. It's fun. OSR and just guys who are curmudgeons like that, they're people who got in on the ground floor, right? I played this when it was brand new, you know, and it's this giant building was built around them. You know, the ground floor is still the ground floor, but now there's 40 stories. And they are still proud that they're on the ground floor. And they hate anyone who's up, you know, in the penthouse, or anyone who's taken the elevator to the top, anyone who's enjoying the view of what's been built on the foundation. But the reality is anytime you go downtown, what's on the ground floor? You know, McDonald's. Honestly, the crap is on the ground floor and the fun is up top. And so they're just mad that they're not in the penthouse partying with us with champagne and having a good old time.
You know what's really crazy is that I'm not like this about D&D. I've played it since second edition. I have no real huge nostalgia for old editions, but I kind of understand it because I get like this with other games. I mean, most especially Shadowrun. I got in late first edition, early second edition. You know, it was one of the first games I'd ever played. And so I occasionally get that way where it's like, oh man, this new edition kind of sucks. I don't like these changes. Why the hell did they ever do this? Blah, blah, blah. And, you know, I don't go on the internet and flame the shit out of people. God damn it. Sorry. Swearing again.
Beep, 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 beep.
I am really offended.
I'm not going around online and flaming the crap out of people about it. But I understand to some extent what they're feeling. I actually like the new edition of Shadowrun to be pertinent, but I could at times get curmudgeon-y. I could get it that old school, get off my lawn kind of way about it.
Get out of McDonald's and come hang out with us, man.
I think there's... Oh, go ahead, Tracy. Sorry.
Yeah, Tracy's holding her breath, Tracy. Over here. Yeah.
Okay, so I think there's a significant portion of the people who are just jerks and, you know, are never going to be happy with anything that isn't exactly the way that they want to play D&D. On the other hand, I think there's a fair amount of people who do have the legitimate gripe that this is a game I really love. This is a game I really want to share with my kids, my friends, my spouse, whatever. And it's no longer officially supported. And not only is it no longer officially supported, for some of them, it's like nobody else can really support it either. Now, I know OSR is a little different. Like, they've brought out, some new versions, but like second and stuff, it gets a little harder to get new content for. And I can understand that to a degree. The part where it starts getting more difficult for me is when they start saying, like, well, you should only play my version of D&D or just don't play D&D at all. And that's where I really want to just smash people. that brings up my nerd rage.
And that's where I get irritated because they're my age. And it's like, look, guys, come on.
And they can't behave like adults.
Exactly. It's like, are you really going to be the comic book guy? Because that's what you are.
Yeah,
and you're the Simpsons comic book guy, and you need to stop.
Right, and these are often the same people who tell me that the female characters can never be as equal because it's an agrarian society, and you know they have to have children.
I think that goes back to the boys' club thing. Like I almost touched on this in my article, but I decided to kind of try and keep sexual and racial things out of it. But I mean, let's
face
it,
area.
The major players in the role-playing game industry are middle-aged white guys who grew up in rooms full of other guys the same age as them. And, you know, it was a boys' club. And I think female gamers intimidate these people. I think young gamers intimidate these people. And they get up at arms. And I can understand the whole, like, I was there. Like, there's a lot of things between music and other games where, you know, I played them when they first launched or first came out. More so video games and such, and now I look at them and it's like, oh, well, you know, you guys got it easy. Like WoW, for example, like you used to have to raid and grind and raid and grind to get epics, and now you log in and they're in your mailbox. There's NPCs that are like, hey, you want some epics? Here you go. So I get it, but at the same time, like, there's a bunch of games I would love to play. Tribes or Tribes 2, I would love to play one of those games, but the servers aren't still live anymore. I'm not going to traipse around the internet saying, well, somebody should fire up a Tribes 2 server and I'm pissed because I can't play it, so everyone else sucks. Like, it just, it's not going to get you anywhere.
You know, Jerry, I think in your last statement, you struck a chord with me and you made me think of a huge point for these, I guess, middle-aged older gentlemen. And
easy.
Randy, I'm not trying to make a prescriptive, stereotypical statement. I'm just saying, let's be real here.
Oh, screw it. I'll make blanket statements, and I will generalize everybody into a box.
Well, you take that and run with it, Thaddeus. Let's hear it.
This is the thing. Sorry, Randall. I didn't mean that middle-aged white guys. Late-aged white guys. Okay,
that's fine.
they're not the ones who are targeted with this, though. That's the thing. D&D isn't being it's growing with its constituency, but it's also being targeted at younger groups. You know, the Redbox is not made for a 50-year-old man who has been playing D&D since the 1970s.
Right.
And And yes, some of the Essentials line is made to draw older players back into the game, but the reality is I think some of them are upset because they're not the target audience anymore. It's not marketed at them. It's not designed for them. You know, for role-playing games and tabletop games to stay alive and stay viable, they have to continue to evolve. And it's not always marketed to them, and I think that makes them grumpy.
No, I think you're right. I think that's a very, very valid point.
You know, it's the same.
I'm not sure you'd want to, but go ahead, yeah.
Oh, I was just going to say, I look at it like the same way that Wii came out and was marketed at non-gamers and at younger people, and, you know, gamers were pissed. They're just like, Nintendo's letting us down. But the reality is they knew that they had a market group that was being overlooked by Sony and by Microsoft, which is, you know, younger and non-gamers, and they ran with it. And I think Dungeons & Dragons is attempting to grab people that it hasn't grabbed for years, and the people who were used to being marketed to by it are upset. And that's kind of how it goes sometimes.
See, in 30 years, I'm totally bringing D&D to every care home.
Oh, man.
I'm totally going to be in the retirement home. It'll be like, nurse, bring me my fucking orange juice and my 20-sided die. We are rolling some stuff up in here.
Exactly. I look forward to being in the same retirement home as Jerry and Tracy. And sadly, Randall, you'll be gone.
I'll be gone. Oh, no, I'll be ahead in a jar.
Okay. Yeah, and brain in the jar, Randall. That's and we'll right. all be at the same retirement home so we can roll together, because by that time it doesn't matter where we are, you know. I'll move to Boston or Florida. We'll all be in Florida, and we'll be rolling bones. You know, and we'll be playing 9th edition, and that's the best part about it.
And hopefully we can convince our kids to come in and play those games with us when they visit in the old folks' home.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So.
Okay, so... What? Oh, wait.
I was going to say, we have some Twitter questions?
Yeah, I was going to say, we're gonna try something new this time. I'm thinking that since we have so much Dungeon Master and Game Master brain power together in one place, that we might answer some questions from people on Twitter.
Okay.
You guys feel like it?
Let's do it.
Sure.
Okay, so Gen Con for James wants to know, when designing a campaign, where's the line between too much design and too little?
It depends on your group. Depends on how you go as a DM. I mean, whatever you feel comfortable with is what you should really go with. I know we were talking about it on 4Geeks, and I seem to have a lot more design in my campaign than anybody else on the show. And I'm totally comfortable with that. I would feel weird having a lot less design. But at the same time, I'd feel overwhelmed if I tried to do a lot more.
Tracy?
I pretty much don't do a lot in advance. So I think it totally depends on your group. I just had a map with some towns, and as we went to different towns, I figured out what they were.
Okay. Jerry?
I meant
geriatric. I meant Randall.
Oh.
Oh.
Oh, hey-o.
Hey-o.
Hey-o. No, Jerry.
You can go ahead first, Jerry. Go ahead.
Okay. Honestly, as much as I talk up, you know, trying to plan ahead and design and create these wonderful worlds, that's never the case, and it usually ends up, it's usually the day of or the day before. I have ideas in my head, and I don't get them down on paper, and I just kind of run with it. So I guess my advice would be to just do whatever you're comfortable with, and if you ever hit that point where you're like, oh, I don't know what to do next, or I don't know how this plot's going to go or whatever, I mean, 90% of the time your players are going to do something you didn't expect them to do anyways, and you're going to have to improvise. So, I mean, build a framework, build a skeleton, but for me, other than that, I just, you know, I have encounters ready, and I have kind of like some patchwork set up that I can plug in here and there, but as far as making hard set plot lines... No, I mean, I do have some hard set dialogue for banter and NPCs and stuff, but other than that, I just kind of, you know, lay a groundwork and see where they take it, because otherwise you might just be wasting a whole bunch of your time.
All right, Randall?
The amount of design I do is in a direct relationship to how much I want to accomplish in the game, and I found that the more that you worry about trivial design and getting down the names of every single NPC and et cetera, the less you can accomplish in the game simply for a matter of time. This is particularly true for someone that's got a full-time job and kids and a wife and everything else. I actually fall into the trap where I have more, I burn more time making props for my game to try to make it a cool experience for my players. So item cards and, you know, and other cool props and things like that that I do that require craft, actual physical crafting time, which actually takes away from design time. So I have to balance those as well. But again, it has to do with how much you want to accomplish in the game. And the more that you plan, unless you have a big start, unless you have a big bump at the beginning where you can plan a lot and then coast, then it makes it difficult to plan a whole lot and still accomplish a significant amount in the game. So for me, anyway.
For me, Thaddeus, the amount of design I do is directly related to how lazy I am. And that usually means that, honestly, it depends on... I work weekends. My work week is Thursday through Monday. And so my games are on Monday night. So it really just depends on how rough my work week was. Because I'll have a great idea on Tuesday, and I'll start planning it out, and then I'll get into my work week. And then, you know, if I have a light work week, I will plan out a pretty bitchin' campaign. If not, I show up with an idea and a couple monsters printed out and roll with it. And sometimes those are the most fun, and sometimes the really planned out are the most fun. So really, I mean, I don't worry myself with whether or not I've created enough or if I've created too much. Some games fall flat and some games soar, and that's just how it's always going to be. So the next question is from the aforementioned Psychopez. And his question is, the war pick. Does anyone take it? And do they take it seriously? Is it the D&D Armory's redheaded stepchild? Tracy? Aaron. Sounds like Aaron wants to go again.
Well, I was just going to say that, you know, it's... I know a lot of people who have taken it. It's not the best weapon in the world, but on the other hand, it's a weapon that's got some flavor. It's a weapon that you don't see very often, and so that to some people makes it a lot more interesting. I've never personally used it, but that doesn't necessarily mean that I wouldn't.
Randall?
For me, the war pick is very much a thematic element for a character, and I would have to have some kind of either a movie or a literary reference to go on for that to be valid for me. I can see like maybe an orc character using it or maybe a dwarf character using it. War pick is a very specific weapon, and the short answer though, if it's not in the essentials group, it's not a weapon. So no, I'm just kidding.
Tracy?
Oops.
Oh, snap.
Me? There's a war pick.
That was gonna be my line.
Best answer of the night.
That's right.
I don't worry about that player stuff. No, I'm just joking.
Okay, Jerry, come up with a new answer on the fly.
War pick. Yeah, I didn't even know that. Like, I've looked at the weapon loadout, the gear selection, and I've never even seen it there, honestly. So if it's there, that's news to me as of right now.
All right.
Do you use that with your teeth?
Oh. But I honestly believe that some weapons are there more to give the DM options for what to give enemies, because I think a couple of orcs with war picks who want to stick them in the players' heads. You know, it's flavor. It's flavor for me. I mean, I could care less if my characters choose them. I like having more than just, hey, look, orcs with swords or orcs with axes. You know? No, these guys have spears. That guy over there has a kopesh. I mean, how many people have used a kopesh before? You know, and there's one over there with a pickaxe or a war pick or whatever.
I had an Avenger try to power game with a kopesh. I don't remember exactly what they were trying to do, though.
It's just that reach. You know, people love the reach on the kopesh. All right. Next question. I got to bring it up here because I'm so not with it right now. Comes from Behemoth 0089. I guess there are 88 more behemoths before him. So the question is, how do you use maps outside of combat? And if you don't, why? And what do you do then? Which is a really open-ended question.
I use Tracy. The Hammerfest map.
Tracy, go.
I use a Hammerfest map to, they could tell me where they were going, and then I could trigger stuff, and then we could move to a different battle mat if they triggered something that we had to draw out more on their scale.
All right. Jerry, go.
Honestly, maps outside of combat, I don't use that often just because there's always that kind of like, if you're in a zone and a player says, I want to go over here, and then I say, oh, you want me to move your mini over here? And then they look at me and say, do I want to move my mini over there? And I'm like, I don't know. You know, you tell me, because there's just that paranoia involved. So unless it's actually a combat encounter, I think the only time I've used maps was I took the tavern tile set with the 3D stuff, and I set up a tavern encounter with some tavern music that I ripped off of Baldur's Gate, and I put a bunch of minis in there as NPCs and kind of let my players mingle. And actually, that was a whole session. There was no combat. It was all RP. It was all skill checks and everything like that, and it worked out good. But other than that, as far as overland travel or walking around a city, yeah, I might have a world map or an overview. They tell me where they want to go, and I just use words to get to where we need to be, because I don't see – it's a pain enough setting up maps for everything under the sun as is and getting all your encounters ready that I don't ever want to bother with, you know, just setting up a map for traipsing around town.
Go.
Go who?
Do I pick somebody to go? Okay, I'll go. I don't use a lot of maps outside of combat. I will on occasion just to mess with players' heads going, because they have that same feeling that, you know, if there's a map there, there's going to be an encounter there. There's going to be combat. So occasionally I'll do a map and just have them move around and make some vague rolls and just mess with their heads, letting them, you know, build up the tension and let them think that something's going to happen at any moment. I don't do it a lot outside of that, just because it is a pain to set up, even using a battle mat or gaming paper. It takes a lot of it takes more effort than I'm willing to put into to make a map that you really, really don't need. So I don't use them a lot outside of combat.
All right, Randall?
I have continental and regional maps prepared ahead of time, and usually town maps as well. They're smaller scale, so they're not too scale, but I will have them out on the table so that people can reference and figure out where the hell they're trying to go. As for combat scale maps, unless there's actually going to be an encounter, I don't lay them down.
I usually print out the same thing. You know, I do regional maps and I do city maps, and I give them to the players in a folder so they can kind of know the area that they're going to be. But I go a little farther, and I know this sounds pretty bad. You know, it's like playing dolls, but you know, when they're doing RP in their base, which is often like an inn or, you know, a mansion or something like that, I'll set it up for them and I'll let them kind of play the scene out and show kind of, you know, where they go and how they interact with the scenery. So they, they play dolls with the little figures in their little dollhouse. But, you know, anything to add to the fun and anything that will help the players kind of get into the RP in the game. So... all right, two more questions to go. The next question is from D&D Princess Aria. And she says, what interval or how much XP would you add to an encounter budget if players seem to be having too easy of a time? And we'll let Jerry go first on this one.
Hi, no, somebody else go first.
I usually
Jerry, go. No, Tracy, go.
I usually just bump it up two levels. A lot of my encounters are about a level or two above normal for now.
Thaddeus, could you repeat the question, please?
If your players are if your encounters are all too easy for your players, she wants to know how much experience do you add to the budget? How many monsters do you add to make it more difficult?
Honestly, I wouldn't add a static number of monsters. I think, to be completely honest, I would fudge some dice rolls, maybe make some zombies get back up after they die, something like that to make it harder, and then if I feel like they earn their keep, I'd give them some bonus XP after it was all said and done. As far as XP budgets, when I first make an encounter, I go by the book, but then anything that happens after that, depending on how the players work, I just bullshit the whole thing. Sorry. I just wing it.
So much work for me in the editing. This one is supposed to be my hit stop and post it podcast.
We could just take off the label.
We could, but I don't have access to that.
Okay, we'll figure it out.
All right. We'll get Sam. Fine. You know what? Fuck it. Fine. Sam Sam can take the fucking clean label off if he wants to. Or get in trouble with iTunes. All right?
Yeah.
Okay. Fuck yeah.
So, yeah, exactly. So I just have one thing to add.
Also, cock balls. There you go.
The other thing I would add is that maybe adding more monsters isn't the way to solve this problem. Adding some terrain elements, protecting your artillery and controllers a little better could go a long way towards making the fight harder without adding a ton more XP.
Damn it. You just took mine.
Sorry.
It's all right. Aaron.
I suck.
Generally, I don't adjust on the fly, not unless it's really possible from a story standpoint. Like if they're in a dungeon or something like that, and I can postulate that somebody's overheard the fight and are coming to investigate, then I might add maybe a quarter of the original total. I'll add that on. But by and large, you know, some fights are just going to be easy. It happens. It makes sometimes it makes the players feel better to walk all over a fight that you've thrown at them, and it just happens. Sometimes it's a dice. Sometimes you just play the monsters wrong.
Randall, tell him why he's wrong, Randall.
No, I'm not going to tell him why he's wrong. That's one way to do it. You could ask my players; they would tell me that I change encounter powers to at wills. That works really effectively. I had Duergar beard quills going off every single round, and it was really pissing them off. And they go, why isn't that? Oh, yeah, I guess it is. But no, beyond that, I usually just, if it looks like it's unbalanced, I'll drop another monster in there to add up the XP. But I go by the XP, I go by whatever the monster count is, so I just go by the math.
Okay. I really like Tracy's answer, because, you know, if my players are having too easy of a time with my last, you know, three or four encounters, if they just breeze through, I like to make the next encounter look like the last encounter, so they get the feeling that everything's going to be okay. And then I like to change, you know, add terrain, add traps that they're not used to, add something that's going to spring on them that will change the entire dynamic of the fight and, you know, throw things up in the air for them. I had made... monsters once that looked normal, but then when they got bloodied, you know, every time you used an encounter power, they got to heal, or, you know, it was just fun stuff like that. If you turn it upside down on them, but make it look like it's normal, then it's even better, because surprise, I think, is more valuable than just adding three or four more monsters, you know.
It's certainly worth the Luca in their faces, that's right.
Exactly.
That's true.
All right, last question is from Mercutio 531. I guess there's a lot of Mercutios, just like Behemoths. When a rogue is wielding a crossbow, how does one simulate or explain powers that affect a blast area? So this guy wants to bring a little more reality, I guess, into his powers. So,
after my blog post today, we all know that reality is not my bag. Can I just get this
one? No, no one gets a pass. Randall.
Wow. I'm not even aware that there were blast powers that emanate from a crossbow. If that's really the case, then I would expect it to be ninja-like movements and rapid crossbow fire. That's how I would it would say pew, pew, pew. So, and there's
all
your
right.
Blast.
The pew, pew method.
Pew, pew, pew.
Aaron?
I tend to agree with Randall for the most part. I also might describe crossbow bolts as like splintering off, you know, breaking into multiple pieces and hitting people like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Tracy?
Yeah, I don't think this problem is limited just to crossbows. I mean, if you had a dagger that you threw, then what would you... It would be the same problem, right?
Basically.
So you could say... You would probably say that there's multiple attacks, to be honest. if you really wanted to simulate it for some reason. I say it just happens and it's awesome and just go with it. But I understand that not everybody likes that.
Okay. Jerry?
I guess if I had to come up with a tangible explanation, it would be splintering crossbow bolts, or maybe it was some kind of alchemical concoction, you know, I don't know, duct tape to the head of the arrow exploding, or multiple shots. But really, I'm going to go with the whole I don't really care. It's a move in a game, and it's cool, and it kills a bunch of shit, kills a bunch of stuff. So just roll with it. That's my answer.
That is, I got it. It's like in that movie where if you moved the crossbow just the right way, it will make a circle and hit everybody.
Curve the bullets.
Tracy, you've got some great answers tonight. But the real answer to this one is anytime something like that happens, a wizard did it.
Yeah, magic.
There you go. That's right.
And it explains everything.
Yeah. How'd that crossbow just hit three people? A wizard did it. there are every answer that we've given tonight is valid, I think.
Yeah.
Except for the bending the bullet one. But wizard
beams is highly more valid than bending bullets.
You could look at it like this is a rogue who has specially prepared ammo. You know, it's like four or five small bolts all strung together, and when it's fired, you know, they break apart. And so that's why you're rolling your chance in a blast area, because, you know, some people will get hit with that kind of fractured arrow. Some people won't. You could say that he's just really fast at the crossbow, or, you know, he is a master of his weapons. And so he designs a crossbow that, you know, skips a step in the reloading. So he's able to actually reload, you know, one step faster and shoot things that much quicker. Or just the fact that throughout your turn, you know, as the entire round's going, he's actually shooting people and reloading and shooting. And so the three people he shoots, he took that entire turn to shoot, you know, and you just figure out a way that in your mind sits best with you and your players, mm-hmm. and you go with that.
Yep, agreed.
Or a wizard did it, you know, whatever.
Yeah, either way.
And if it doesn't work, you know, pick a different power, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah, if you can't get your... That's the other thing. There's been some powers that I've looked at, and it's like, yeah, that's not right for my idiom. You know, it's just like, that just doesn't work for me, so choose something different. And that's why there's so many options there, and I'm good with that. Yeah. So.
You know, and I think it works with daggers and bows and arrows and stuff, because daggers, we've all seen the picture of, like, the ninja with three daggers in his hand, you know, like he's going to throw all three at once and can actually hit something that way, but, you know... You go with what works, and what doesn't, you leave on the roadside.
That's right.
But I think we are well into the hour plus, so I think now would be a good time to talk about what we've been doing on the internet and then go our separate ways. And no one's disagreeing with me, so. Tracy, what have you done lately, and what do you want to pimp?
What have I done lately? I had my new post on temporary hit points about picking powers, surprisingly enough.
Very apropos.
Right. I have my blog. I did a blog post on the dragon die, which was really interesting. That's SarahDarkMagic.com. And I think that's pretty much it for now.
Okay. Yeah, that's pretty quiet for you.
That's because I'm busy working on the Lost City project, which is an open design Cobalt Quarterly project, then I get to rate 12 pages of the book.
See, I thought there was a little more going on. Mm-hmm. Randall, what have you been up to?
Well, I've been writing a series of posts designing equipment cards from the Essentials book, which got absolutely no response whatsoever, but that's okay. So they're out there in case anyone finds them useful. I just thought it might be a neat idea for people to be able to, like, if you walked into a town... And, hey, what's this guy got for sale? You could whip out a deck of cards and you could, like, you know, do a little bit of a random shuffle and say, well, he's got three bows and he's got two suits of armor and he's got, you know, three packs of this. And to provide a little bit of, oh, my God, simulation.
That's not a bad idea. I like that.
Deal. But the cards are out there. They're all done. I'm going to do a summary in the coming week, I think, for how best to use the cards. But, yeah, that's what I was working on this week, so.
Okay. And any work on maybe your
www.initorwhat.com. Sorry.
Okay. Any work on maybe your Star Frontier project that you were working on?
Yeah, it's there on the back burner. That I swear. Right. Don't hurt me. Don't whip me.
Aaron, what have you been up to?
You know, most of my gaming output's really slowed down. I've got a project I'm working on with Sam, but even then, that's not much is getting done with that in the last few weeks. I'm mostly working on my novel right now for NaNoWriMo, and that's I've been working on it so hard there really hasn't been anything else. No blog posts, no nada.
Okay. Do you want us to put a link to your project?
No.
Can we? That's okay. It's not public? Okay.
I'm not posting it.
Sorry. Okay. Okay. No, it's fine. It's fine. Just thought we'd offer. And Jerry, what have you been up to?
Besides
inciting and stirring up trouble.
Right, besides causing trouble. Other than procrastinating about making my last three Left 4 Dead zombies into D&D monsters, I've been blatantly ripping off of you, trying to get my D5C initiative off the ground, kind of like DT-140, only in a more malicious intent, I guess. And that's been so far so good. I've been working back and forth with Save versus Death. He also goes by Sursa V. He's the one who won my logo contest. Happens to be a pretty cool dude, and we're just kind of collaborating. He's helped me with the last Left 4 Dead monster. He's definitely got that guy's mind is just 100% crunch, and he's super good at it.
Nice.
Other than that, trying to work on some revisions of the website, spruce it up a little bit visually, and in 2011. Top Secret may have a podcast in the works. Won't say who or what, but I guess that's that for now.
Awesome.
And, I'd like to put a plug in that I think our next guest on the show should be Jerry's wife because she's better looking than Jerry is.
Careful. Careful.
She's sitting right behind me. She just whipped her head around. I will let her know.
See, then my if we're going by that done. Kind of logic, we should have Randall's wife on the show because she cooks pancakes.
Oh man, I made
heck yeah.
I made her pancakes the other night. Oh my god.
I actually looked up awesome. Your wife's pancake recipe tonight and jotted it down because she's going to make them for me tomorrow morning before breakfast.
Oh, that's you're going to love them. They are.
Yeah, let me know how that goes, man. Yeah.
They're crazy good.
And send her a note. She'll appreciate that.
Okay, I'll let her know to do that.
Yeah.
And I guess if I have to plug my website, it is dreadgazebo.net, and I also write for the extremely classy This Is My Game, or myrpgame.com.
That's a pretty good site.
I go there
every once in a while. Yeah, you wouldn't.
It's run by the good Reverend Thaddeus Cooper.
I'm a deacon. I'm not a reverend. So let's see. We got a new 4 Geeks 4 E podcast that just came out yesterday. We announced the winner, or did it come out today? Oh, it came out today.
Today.
So, yeah, today. We announced the winner of our logo contest that Jerry also stole from us. He likes to borrow heavily.
Wait a minute. I think I did the logo contest first, didn't I?
Oh, maybe. I don't think so.
I'm really jealous of your guys' icon
avatar, by the way. She's a big fan of orcs and the large lower canine teeth or whatever you want to call those. She was telling me today how much she likes it.
Those would be lower incisors.
Lower incisors. I'm not a teeth guy, you know.
Well, you know. I'm a level 1 biologist, so I'm just getting into this stuff. So.
Yeah, I have jealous of those avatars, man. I totally want an avatar done in that style.
They're really awesome.
Yeah, they are. They are. Let's see. So, you'll have to if you listen to the podcast, you can learn how to get in touch with the guy. Maybe he'll make one for you, too. It won't have the really sweet 4 Geeks 4E logo pasted on it, but...
No, that's fine.
Not everybody's that. let's see. So, new 4 Geeks 4E. Doing some stuff on the website, always. About to post the thing that I've worked on with Ben from Ben's RPG Pile. We're making some basically like random spell potions where... You can find some common items and some uncommon items and mix them together and brew a potion that kind of creates these weird special effects. That's about it. Oh, I've got a new podcast that I'm starting with a 1 Tracy Hurley and a 1 Mike Robles. And that actually will be recording tomorrow night, so hopefully we're releasing sometime next week, and that's called Geek Cred. And I have no idea what that's going to look like because we have not talked about what we want to do. We just got really excited and decided we'd do it. So,
yeah, it happens.
Yeah, yeah. It, a lot with me, apparently. So so that's it. That sounds like we've got our podcast voted.
I'm trying not to dilute my brand, Thaddeus. So
yeah.
I'm not on that one.
Yeah. Well, believe me, there's a lot of my brand, baby, to go around. So.
Oh,
I got a pretty big brand.
One more thing is that I'm kicking off a new campaign with some friends. It's just a small group. I only have 3 players. But this time around, I'm taking off my kid gloves, and I'm going to kill someone instead of making up dumb excuses for letting their characters live.
So, nice.
When that happens, I will let the world know that I finally killed a player, and I'm not a Care Bear anymore. I'm still struggling with that, but so far, so good.
See, the funny part is you do stuff like that and you're not, and you haven't killed characters. I'm not trying to kill characters, and yet I kill them all the damn time.
Never playing Gamma World with Aaron. I know that.
No, you really shouldn't. If you are, you should probably bring, you know, like 3 or 4 characters. So,
all right, guys.
All right.
And gal and lady.
I'll be an honorary guy. It's okay.
Lady of the house. Thanks for coming again. Hopefully we'll get together in a week or maybe a little more and do this again.
Sounds great, guys.
Good show.
Thanks for the good times, guys. Thanks for the good times. And you don't actually have to hang up. We just stop recording.